In the book Fahrenheit 451, Ray Bradbury wrote this: "Everyone must leave something behind when they die. Something your hand touched some way, so your soul has somewhere to go when you die. It doesn't matter what you do, so long as you change something from the way it was before you touched it into something that's like you after you take your hands away." On March 11th, 1912, a small article appeared in the Idaho Statesman. Its headline read, "Boise Unitarian Church Closed Indefinitely." Here we are today. We have just welcomed 10 new members into the fellowship. We are over the 300 member mark now. And I am deeply thankful this indefinite closure did not last. It was resurrected by some passionate Unitarians and has been growing and evolving, becoming a thriving spiritual home for so many and a beacon for justice in our community. The sermon today is about legacy, honoring our history and our roots, grateful for the seeds that were planted, allowing us to grow into the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of today in 2016. In exploring our heritage, we allow the legacy of our ancestors and founders to live on in our memories. We also ask ourselves, what lessons can we learn from the past? And what legacies do we want to create for future generations of UUs? What do we hope they will say about us in 100 years or more? For those of you that don't know, we have an incredible historical archive here at BOOF. And I know many members have made it their special mission to tend to this archive and to keep our history. So I have really enjoyed looking through all the scrapbooks and articles and old sermons and orders of service as I prepared for today. But I especially want to thank Janelle Winterstein, who has been an avid leader of those history keepers. She wrote a great retrospective on our early Unitarian history here in the Treasure Valley. And Mary Schwartzman, who compiled her own memories of the early years of the fellowship, which she dubbed the pre-Elizabethan era. I used much of their work and their reflections, and reflections from many others of our faithful history keepers, to craft this sermon. That Idaho Statesman article in 1912 went on to read, "The Unitarian Church has had an uphill struggle ever since its existence in this city. Equipped with an attractive little church home on the corner of 9th and Franklin, the church has had several brilliant ministers, but the congregation has always been divided in their appreciation of them." Indeed, the early 1900s were a great struggle for the church and its ministers. With expansion happening rapidly in the far west and this Rocky Mountain region and railroads, the American Unitarian Association, along with many other denominations, were keen to follow that expansion and set up churches out here in the west. This was back in the day when our American Unitarian Association would send Unitarian missionaries, ministers, charged with planting churches in the new western cities. In those early years, these Boise Unitarians had 4 different ministers. None seemed to last more than a few years. One minister, the Reverend John Mitchell, whose portrait hangs in our office, was determined to build a church. In 1907, he had a dedicated membership that had grown to around 100 people. They had a lot of land, and they were working on a building, but as is a challenge for so many churches, even today, they needed money. Maybe you remember back in September when I talked about Reverend Mitchell's steadfast pursuit of this vision for Unitarianism in Boise. Let me refresh your memory. In a letter that he wrote to the National Women's Alliance appealing for funds, he said this, "I am therefore intensely anxious to make the Boise Church the headquarters of a grand missionary enterprise. Think of it. Our church is the only church of the liberal Christian faith in this great empire state. The most very cruel notions of religion prevail throughout this state. Unitarians are regarded as infidels and enemies of the Christian religion. I am sure there is no place in this great country of ours that is worthy and needs so much help as this vast missionary field, having the city of Boise for a center. Oh, this work must not fail. Oh, this work must not fail." Perhaps you remember those words. Such a passionate proclamation back in 1907. I have taken to using Reverend Mitchell's words as a kind of mantra for myself in this work. But there was a failure of sorts. John Mitchell moved on from Boise to help start churches in other Western cities, and within a couple of years, the church suspended its services and activities due to a lack of funds and some evidence that there was a bit of rancor and contention that bubbled up near the end of their time together. I wonder if Reverend Mitchell heard about the closing of the church he helped create. I wonder if he felt that as a failure of his own in some way. If only John Mitchell could see us now, could he have known then, in 1907, what would become of his legacy? Could he have imagined then that his name would be remembered and his passion for liberal faith in this empire state, where it was reviled and dismissed, would be held up as a grand vision still relevant more than 100 years later? Could he have known that he planted seeds of Unitarianism that would eventually grow to become this fellowship? 26 years passed, with some intermittent gathering of lingering Unitarian families, but nothing particularly organized or institutional, until 1948, when another little ad appeared in the Statesman, announcing that a Unitarian field rep would be at the Boise Hotel on a particular date and time, and he desired to meet with all interested Unitarians. Sure enough, a good-sized group gathered, and the resurrection of the church began under the guidance of the Unitarian Association's new fellowship movement. This new movement encouraged the formation of small lay-led societies or fellowships as a growth strategy for the association in the post-World War II boom. John Mitchell's seeds began to grow. You see, there were a couple of families active in that early church of John Mitchell's who had young children, and those young children, now grown, held on to something that they remembered from that Unitarian church and that Unitarian minister, even as they were raising their own children in the Congregationalist church. They were the Van Hook sisters, Ethel and Nell, who married and later became Ethel Hopper and Nell Tregaskis. And their families became founding members, along with several others, of the Boise Unitarian Fellowship, beginning in 1955 officially, and then incorporating the same day the Unitarians and Universalists merged together in 1961 to become our now beloved BOOF. In those early years, meetings of fellowships were held in people's homes. Ethel and John Hopper hosted the fellowship for several years, among many other families until they finally decided that they were growing and they needed a space. And so they found temporary homes in various spaces around the city, from the art gallery to Cloverdale Elementary School to the basement of the YWCA. In her own account of the history, Ethel Hopper recalls being reminded just how difficult it was to be a Unitarian at that time. Some of the guest speakers they would invite from the College of Idaho declined their invitation, feeling their jobs would be in danger if they came to speak to this stalwart group of liberal free thinkers. This new fellowship became a place for liberal-minded seekers and for transplants from other traditions looking for something more progressive, somewhere where they could express their doubts freely and ask questions. A community more open and expansive and willing to explore ideas of philosophy and religion than the ones that they had left behind. As Mary Schwartzman described in her experience, Booth was a place where she and Alan, who was raised Jewish, could come and neither had to convert. But those early years were not without challenges. Certainly finding the right gathering space was something that was always under discussion, especially as they grew. Did they need their own building? And as became a pattern for lay-led fellowships who found themselves deeply, deeply committed to their intellectual ideals, their individualism and sense of freedom, there also rose up a resistance to institutional authority and organized religion. Words like worship and God and prayer were challenged. The singing of hymns was avoided. There was even a resistance to passing a collection plate because it smacked too much of organized religion. Except when they took up an offering, they found they had more money to support the fellowship. So a compromise was reached, and they would call it a collection basket, not a collection plate, and voila! We still have baskets today. These are just a few of the early stories that make up our history and our heritage. There are so many more to tell. Each legacies in their own right, each full of beauty and passion and commitment to this community and to our wider faith. Stories of others who helped shape this fellowship into what it has become. Stories of the Duncan family, of Leroy Owens, of the lay ministry of Jim Tompkins and his wife Charlotte, who was the accompanist for so many years and still attends today. Of Elaine Durbin, who is still with us and has served this fellowship in so many ways. The stories of John and Vi Harms, whose legacy continues with their own families in the fellowship, who continue to serve us, the Halls and the Langworthies, and so many more. These are names that some of you might not know. They might not mean anything to you. I didn't know these people. But there is power in saying their names, in evoking their memories. And let me tell you, as I was looking through those scrapbooks, these early founders were as committed to justice as this fellowship is today. There are countless articles about peace rallies and environmental pursuits, countless guest opinions written by members of this fellowship promoting liberal religious values in Boise and the Treasure Valley. There is not time to tell them all in one service, but I encourage you to explore them on your own, to keep telling them to one another and to me, and I will tell them too. Because in their telling, we remind ourselves of the connection to our roots, to the legacy upon which we must continue to build. Ethel Hopper wrote about those early days of the fellowship, all the toil and labor and love that people gave to building the community and making it a home. In her words, you can hear the echo of the same passion and commitment expressed by Reverend John Mitchell, a whisper of the legacy planted here among us. Here is what she wrote. If the Unitarian movement could have been destroyed in Boise, it would have been. There were many discouragements, but we are stronger and more hopeful than ever. We surely have a reason to live and the will to do so. We must never lose faith in each other. Oh, this work must not fail. We have a legacy worthy of our continued care and attention. How shall we nurture and tend to it? How shall we continue to build our UU faith to be a voice for liberal values for another 100 years or more? What is required of us to ensure this legacy continues? Today is a good day to ask these questions as we welcome new members and come together this afternoon for our annual congregational meeting. Because part of the legacy protected by those early founders was the legacy of our free faith, that radical freedom and individualism upon which we stand and its commitment to democracy. Members, you have a voice in this community. You have a vote. It is you who sets the requirements for membership and officially affirms new members just as you did today. It is not your minister or the church who has this authority. It is you. It is you as members of this congregation who vote for your board of directors and vote on your budget as you will today at the congregational meeting. And while these things tend to, over the years, feel sometimes cumbersome and sometimes trivial, that vote, that voice, is a cornerstone of our tradition and something that sets us apart from many other faith traditions. This afternoon, your board will present next fiscal year's budget to you, and you will see that in order to fully realize our vision for the coming year, we still need more pledges. We're a little better off than 1907. We need you. We need each other. We need your energy and commitment, your ideas and leadership, your love and faith to continue the legacy of this fellowship for generations to come. We are the faith of the larger liberty. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are their legacy, just as we add our own. The great writer Carl Sandburg, winner of 3 Pulitzer Prizes, wrote this. You can't go tramping around from church to church to fulfill your obligations. You've got to settle on one church and throw your life into it and build it up. Who would want to go to a picnic all the time and eat out of other people's baskets? It is our obligation as members of one church to give ourselves to it. You've got to feel that you are a part of the greatest organization on earth that is going to outlast all the rest of them. You've got to feel the importance of your own individual participation in its life. The church is the only hope for peace and goodwill for all that exists among us. It is the last hope of the earth, and yours is as high and holy an opportunity to support it with undeviating loyalty. Just as our founders did in the early days, back in the early 1900s and in the early 50s, friends, oh, this work must not fail. We must not lose faith in each other. May it be so. Amen.